This episode of the Beauty Industry Podcast was brought to you by Aspect Skincare. Hello and welcome to the Beauty Industry Podcast, your online support community for the professional beauty industry. I am your host, founding director of Beauty Industry, Tamara Reid. Here, we are closing the competitive gap and speaking your language. This is a platform created and dedicated to the professional beauty industry, valuing community over competition. We serve to help connect you with inspiration from industry experts, expand your knowledge through educational pieces, and bring you the latest in product and technology innovation. This is Beauty Industry. Today, my guest is Brooke Holmes from Me Skin and Body. I'm sure you've all seen Brooke on your Instagram and Facebook feeds by now, but for those who don't know, Brooke is the business owner and director behind the South Yarra-based salon Me Skin and Body. A homeschooling aromatherapy class sparked Brooke's interest with our industry before later connecting with it to study her diploma of beauty therapy. With raving reviews, an incredible industry fan base, along with a laundry list of celebrity clientele, it is clear that Brooke and her team provide their clients with the best service possible, and they strive to make the experience at Me Skin and Body a pleasant and memorable one, all while achieving incredible results. Under Brooke's down-to-earth, approachable, and honest leadership, which you'll hear themes of today, Me Skin and Body has won AST's Best Clinical Skin Transformation Award and Best Social Media and Marketing Award in 2019, and has also been a finalist for the My Face, My Body's Best Aesthetic Practice Victoria Award in 2016. Today, Brooke and I chat life, learnings, leadership, and everything in between in a conversation I'm sure you'll love. Here's Brooke and I for Beauty Industry. Brooke, welcome to the Beauty Industry Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for joining me this morning. Hey, we start all of our episodes right back at the beginning of the career because I feel like it's a really important place to start. Everyone has entered into this industry so uniquely and so differently. And I'd love to find out for you how you entered into the professional beauty industry.
Look, I think it was just a bit of a natural evolution, really. When I was in high school, I actually studied aromatherapy. So I used to make all my own creams and lip balms and treatment oils and things. I've always really been, I guess, into beauty, but at the time I didn't really maybe even realize it was a thing. So when I finished school, I just, you know, went into doing hospitality and kind of did that for a few years, and then my partner and I decided to move to Melbourne and stumbled across the Australian College of Hair Design and Beauty's doorway in I think it was Russell Street at the time, and I was like, oh, that looks interesting, you know, that actually looks like something I'd like to do. So I enrolled and did my diploma in beauty therapy there, and I think that was in about 2003. I've been in the industry ever since.
Amazing. What kind of high school did you go to where they had aromatherapy in their lesson course?
Well, funnily enough, I was homeschooled.
Oh, interesting.
So I was actually homeschooled right up until year 10. So mum homeschooled all of us. I've got quite a few brothers and sisters in Byron. And then I did my high school certificate through TAFE. So yeah, I didn't actually go to a traditional or conventional school, but was, you know, it enabled me, I guess, to be able to explore interests and avenues that possibly wouldn't have if I had have gone to a normal school.
Yeah, very cool. And so when you walked past that hair and beauty college, what was it that made you go, actually, this is kind of where I want to begin my career and study?
I think they just had a bit of an outline on the doorway of their courses and what was, you know, what made up their courses, and things like facials, you know, manicures, pedicures, makeup was always something that I liked. So just seeing all those things kind of lumped together under one category, I was like, oh, that looks like a fun course. You know what I mean? Like, just seeing them all written there together, I thought, yeah, this is something I could do. I didn't really have any particular trajectory that I was on other than knowing that I was moving to Melbourne to better myself and grow. Yeah, so I feel like it just made sense at the time.
yeah, very cool. And so you started studying, obviously qualified. How did you get out into industry? Did you find it hard to find your first job, or how did that kind of transaction take place?
I actually didn't find it hard at all. And I think that was because I went into the course, you know, I wasn't like straight out of school or anything like that. Like some of the people that I went into the course with, they were, you know, 16, 17 years old, were just doing it for something to do, didn't really know and weren't taking it maybe as seriously, or, you know, parents were paying for it for them. So they were just going through the motions. Whereas I, you know, had some savings, paid for it myself. So I really wanted to get as much out of the course as I could. So I was very diligent at school, and, you know, that particular school had a little salon attached to it. So we had to do our, you know, in class components, but then we also had to do a lot of actual treatment time in the salon there to get confident doing treatments. And headmaster of the school at the time, I think, recognized that, you know, I was always the one putting my hand up to do treatments when they were available to be done. And she actually got me a job working at Paint and Powder in Armidale, which I think was one of her friends owned it or something. So, you know, as soon as I'd left school, I had a job. It wasn't like a process for me, although I know it is difficult for some people these days, but yeah, my experience was a bit different back then, but that was a long time ago.
Yeah, I can really relate to your experience there of paying off your course yourself, yeah, and being really diligent, because I did the same. I was working at a bakery for like $10 cash in hand, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I saved up, I think it was my first $5,000 to put down the deposit for my course. And then while I was studying, I worked at Crown Casino in events. And so I would finish beauty school at 4:30.
Yep.
Start my shift at 5,
yep,
and then I would work all the way through to the night, sometimes finishing at 3 a.m. and then I'd start beauty school at 9. But because we paid our way through it, like I saw girls flipping in and out and, you know, not.
Yeah, same. I worked as well, working at Candy Bar on Greville Street, actually.
Ah, there you go.
Yes, I was working weekends there, and then my husband was working. He was my husband then, but he is now. But, you know, working nights, and, you know, so we barely saw each other for that year. But, you know, it was like I didn't have anyone to support me financially through it. So I busted my ass to get it done. So I wasn't going to, you know, waste it.
yeah, absolutely. And so when you got into this industry, and obviously you're working through your career, did business ownership always appeal to you, or did that just come about in another way?
Look, I think it, from a fairly early point of time on, it sort of did, because I don't know, if I just like doing things the way I like to do them. And I think working one place to the next, I moved around, you know, a few different salons early on in the piece. And, you know, I just didn't always like the way clinics or salons did things. And, you know, I felt like that there was a better way for them to be done. And, you know, I think being able to make those choices and have that, I guess, autonomy to be able to say, no, this is the way I feel like a facial should be done, and I'm going to do it this way, you can't really do that when you're working for somebody else. So I think after, it probably took me about maybe 3 or 4 years, and I sort of knew that, yeah, that was definitely something that was a goal of mine, and I was sort of always quietly sort of saving for that next step. So yeah, I think, yeah, it took me, you know, a few years of working for different owners to realize, but it definitely, you know, happened fairly on in the piece, fairly early on in the piece.
Yeah. Do you know what? I can always tell who's going to be a business owner when they're a therapist, because they're always pushing the envelope and asking the annoying questions and saying, but why? And why can't we do this? And I'm like, you're going to be a business owner one day. I know it.
It's funny, because I've actually since bumped into or spoken to over the years people that actually were teachers at my school back then, and they're like, oh, we always knew you would end up doing, you know, bigger things. And like, it's they obviously could see early on that, you know, I'd end up kind of probably going down the the owner path rather than just, you know, being a therapist. Not that there's anything wrong with just being a therapist.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's I think other people probably recognize that as well.
So at what point and how did Me Skin and Body become a business?
I actually bought Me Skin and Body off its previous owner in 2009. So it was the same year I got married. So it was a pretty full-on hectic year. So yeah, it was back when I bought it then, it was very much a full service beauty salon, nails, tanning, massage, you know, body treatments, all that sort of stuff. So that's, you know, was never really passionate about all those other areas so much that, you know, are offered in the typical beauty realm. So I think, you know, I bought it then, but pretty much, you know, wanted to steer it in the direction of becoming much more skin focused from that point. And yeah, that's basically how I started with it.
Yeah, that's really exciting. Do you know what? We are very similar because I stepped into beauty industry full time about a month before I got married. So we're kind of crazy, aren't we?
Yeah, I know. I'm like, God, that was a bit much that year. It was pretty, 2009 was pretty wild.
So you must feel pretty content then in your hindsight, I guess we could call it, because niching down businesses is really the way that the kind of industry has come to from 2020 and 20 beyond. Yeah. I mean, how do you think about that time? Do you feel like you were just smart about it, or did you have a particular plan to just focus on skin and body?
No, I think it wasn't necessarily being smart about it. I don't think I could give myself any specific credit there. I think it was purely just, again, probably coming back down to my maybe stubbornness, if you want to call it that, or I'm the sort of person, like, I feel like if I don't love doing something, I don't want to spend my time doing it. So, you know, for me, like I said, I was never really passionate about doing nails or waxing or things like that. I always loved doing eyebrows. So I kind of just kept steering it in that direction and gradually phasing those things off the menu because I just didn't want to do them. I feel like I'd rather just stick to what I'm good at, and I believe that I'm good at facials, I'm good at eyebrows, and, you know, didn't want to waste time doing all the other things. And I feel like I kind of, I don't know if it just happened organically or not, but the team members that I've you know, attracted over the years have been very much the same. Like, they haven't been, you know, that interested in doing all those other things either. So we just over the time keep phasing them out to the point where now we're pretty much 90% skin, and I'm happy about that, and so are all the girls that work for me.
Yeah, for sure. I can imagine there's a lot of people who are listening, and I can hear them asking this question in their head already, or they're hesitant to do so. And that's change services or delete services off your menu, because sometimes clients have been with us for so long. How did you navigate that change?
Yeah, that was a little bit tricky with some things, particularly I found with our older clients. Like, some of the clients, you know, that once I bought the business, they'd been coming for a long time, like years and years, and particularly for things like your manis and pedis and stuff. And, you know, they were just so used to coming to us for nails. Even once I dropped them off the menu altogether, they didn't really want to go anywhere else. So I guess for a little while there was that transitional phase where we made a few exceptions for those loyal, long-standing clients. And, you know, even though there were treatments that weren't on the menu anymore or on our website or anything, we'd still do them just for those particular people. But eventually, I think, you know, just they got used to the idea that it wasn't something we did. And, you know, I guess there's always that fear that people want a one-stop shop so that they might end up going somewhere else that does offer it all. But I think that was a little bit of an older mindset, to be honest. I think these days people are happy to go specifically to one person for one type of service and somewhere else for another type of service. I feel like the industry and clients have evolved that way. So, you know, initially it was a little bit challenging, but yeah, we just worked through it and tried to accommodate people as best we could in the interim phase.
Yeah, very cool. And I guess once you put up those boundaries, you know, you don't want to be doing treatments that don't fulfill your heart, you know, because that's when you start to get average treatments, not exceptional treatments. And the clients know that. Interesting. So talk to me then. You mentioned about your team. Now, you have a therapist who has been with you for 10 years. And in our community, we hear of troubles and all of these different things about therapists leaving, you know, after a couple of months. How have you managed to keep someone in your team for 10 years? I mean, you must do a lot of, you know, energy spent with them. You must do a lot of development and a lot of investment in them.
Well, that's kind of the 10-year thing's kind of true, but kind of not. So basically, that particular person is Rachel. She's the manager of the clinic. So she started with me whilst she was studying, and she was, you know, we basically just had her doing reception, and I'd spend hours and hours and hours with her, you know, training her and getting her up to scratch to the standard I wanted her to be at and needed her to be at. And so we got to that point, and then she worked her way up to a managerial role in the salon years ago. So I think she started working for me, I might have even been 2010, possibly, like the year after I bought the business. Can't remember exactly, maybe it was 2009. But so she stayed with me then for about 5 years, and then she went off because she wanted to explore, I think, other areas like laser, which we weren't offering at the time. So she went off and worked in a laser clinic and did that for maybe a year or two, found that the whole environment just wasn't for her. And for whatever reason, we never weren't friends or totally disconnected from each other. I think, you know, obviously with things like Facebook and stuff, there was always that little bit of contact there. But yeah, at one point I was looking for someone to reached out to her, and I was like, oh, you know, do you know anyone looking for a job? And she's like, well, I don't know, I'll come back if you want to. and I jumped at it, obviously. So yeah, she came back, and I think she's been back with me now for maybe another 5 or so years, and she's currently managing the salon. She's my right-hand girl. So, you know, there was a little interim in the middle of that 10-year period, but accumulatively, yes, it is 10 years.
Yeah, but I think that speaks a lot to obviously the culture that you've developed within your team. I mean, often people don't feel like they can come back and return. So that says a lot about your leadership.
Well, I've had a few girls actually over the years that, you know, I've kept really good contact with and, you know, developed really good relationships with, and, you know, they know that at any time that if ever they wanted their job back, they'd be able to come back. Like it wouldn't even be, I'd make room for them in the team, even if I didn't really have room at the time. So that kind of makes me feel proud that I've got those relationships, and I don't have a reputation in the industry as some sort of horrible boss that once people leave, they don't want to bar off. You know what I mean? I always try and make them feel really valued and appreciated, and, you know, develop it's almost like a family, I guess, once you're part of the team, and they know that I'm always there for them on every level. And I try to be as approachable as possible. I think maybe I wasn't in the first few years because I was pretty stressed and at the undertaking of, you know, becoming a new business owner, and, you know, learned a few lessons the hard way and lost a few good team members way back then because I might have been a little bit stricter or didn't have maybe the diplomacy skills that perhaps I have now. I feel like there was probably a few girls back then that might have had a different opinion of me to what some of the girls that work for me now do. But, you know, it's all a learning process, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with leadership, I think, you know, anyone can learn the books or the business or the computer, but leadership is a whole nother pathway, which you need to do. You know, you need to stuff up,
don't you? Massively. Otherwise, it's not something that comes naturally to everybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And talking about learning. Sorry.
It's the hardest part of being a business owner, I think, is making sure you're a good leader and managing a team. And yeah, I find that bit always the most challenging.
After the break, Brooke and I explore the pathway she took from therapist to business owner while learning about the successes and challenges she's encountered along the way. But first, a word from today's Beauté partner. Community, if you are a fan of high-quality skincare combined with mineral makeup, then you are going to be thrilled to hear that Aspect Skincare are launching a whole new range to their line, Aspect Minerals. A collection of skin-loving mineral makeup that pairs perfectly with yours and your clients' Aspect Skincare routines, ensuring your skin is smooth, hydrated, and radiant. Landing on the 8th of February this year, the range is sure to be a hit with your clients both at home and as an after-treatment solution. To be the first to find out more, sign up at aspect.aspectskincare.com/signup for the launch dates and information. Thank you so much to the team at Aspect Skincare for making this episode of the Beauty Industry Podcast possible. And now, back to Brooke. I'm wondering, have you invested any kind of further study or qualifications that have taught you, you know, and upskilled your skills across these couple of years?
Personally, I've done quite a few different short courses since doing my diploma. I've always been really passionate about natural medicine and nutrition. So I've done lots of little, you know, post-grad courses that, you know, improve my knowledge in those areas so that I can incorporate that into my you know, beauty therapy training. And I've also done like cosmetic tattooing, which I did for a few years. But again, one of those things I realized I just wasn't that passionate about. So I stopped doing that. But yeah, I've done lots of little short courses. I haven't gone on and done, you know, your dermal therapies degree or anything like that. But one course that stands out that I feel like I did get a lot out of was something that AST used to offer a few years back was their Medical Aesthetics Institute course. So they don't run that anymore. I wish they did. And I'm sure they'll probably come up with something equivalent at some point in the future. But that was fantastic. That was like, I think 3 days or 5 days intense skin training. And, you know, it wasn't brand specific, but it was so useful and inspiring. And just, yeah, I feel like I learned a lot from that. Yeah, lots of little ones over the years, but nothing, you know, I haven't gone on and done any nursing degrees or anything.
Yeah, interesting. Now, I want to chat to you about COVID because obviously that made quite the impact on everybody's business last year. And yep. I was sitting back watching your business and you transitioned really, really quickly with, you know, online consultations and retail via e-commerce. Had you always placed an importance on consult and prescription and products prior to the pandemic, or did that give you a bit of a wake-up call?
No, I 100% did. So, look, we have been, I feel like our skin consultations and diagnostic side of things has always been a strength. And, you know, it's something that I really focus on training the team in all the time and making sure their skills are really up to date in that area so that clients, they can come in and they're getting an educational facial, not just a treatment that's, you know, someone's applying something on their skin and then at the end it's like, here's a nice hydrating moisturizer and, you know, this cleanser is good for oily skin, off you go. Like they really spend a lot of time, you know, analyzing the skin, finding out what's going on and why, what underlying drivers are there, and how can they really help clients to get the best possible results with the tools that we have, which obviously are products and then treatment modalities. So that's always been a priority and a focus, you know, the aftercare, follow up, all that sort of thing. You know, we always follow up our clients with emails to make sure that, you know, they're going okay with their routine and just trying to keep everything as educational as possible. Because I think if your clients feel educated, they feel like you've invested in them, then they'll keep coming back for more. And so with COVID for us, like the day we went into that first lockdown, I was just like, you know, in a bit of a spin. I didn't know what to do. And I was just like, well, you know, this isn't good enough. Like I need to be doing something. We can't just be closed and not be able to do anything for our clients. So I just turned on my iPhone and was like, I'm going to film myself do a facial and talk through the steps as eloquently as I possibly can. And, you know, I'm like, I hate being on camera. I hate being filmed. I don't like seeing myself on video, but, you know, I just thought, no, I'm just going to have to suck it up, do it, keep it as real as possible, you know? And, yeah, give people some options of things that they can be doing at home, because obviously just because everyone's in lockdown doesn't mean people's skin concerns go away. So the response was really immediate and strong, and yeah, it just motivated me to kind of keep going in that direction. And I was lucky, we had a pretty decent audience on Instagram. We had our online store set up already, and that had been going for years. So, you know, I think consumers were confident to shop on there because it was not something I'd just thrown together as a reflex. But had I not had those things, it probably would have been a lot harder transition, I think, to pivot and do all those things that we had to do in COVID.
Yeah, interesting. And in fact, people's skins got worse during COVID because everyone was sitting indoors and not exercising and eating crap and watching Netflix. And they needed skin more. Yeah.
And then we had the, you know, maskne, and it was like, okay, well, here's a new skin condition we all have to learn about. And now, you know, with only trial and error on our own skins, work out, you know, what's going on and how we can then help our clients through that. So, you know, and that was a massive thing that people kept reaching out going, hey, help, I'm getting acne, I've never had acne before, or perioral dermatitis, you know, all these flare-ups. And you know, we had to try and assist them through that, and I mean, we did. And you know, the virtual consultations I felt were really, really important, and that was something that you know, clients really loved that we offered. It was, again, trial and error. We were playing around with doing them via FaceTime or Skype, or, you know, working out which was the best modality to do it. And, you know, it was a bit awkward for the girls getting used to doing consults like that. Obviously, nothing's going to ever be as good as face-to-face. But look, I think, you know, getting people to send through their photos beforehand, close up, you know, in really good light, gave us a really good canvas to start from, like, and then being able to chat through all their concerns via Zoom or whatever it was. Yeah, we were still really able to coach people through and offer them that service that they were wanting that we couldn't offer in clinic.
Yeah, for sure. It really lights my fire how you said before, you know, as soon as the kind of pandemic hit, you just got in there and you know, jumped on your video and tried to do the facial straight away and walk through with your clients. It seems like you're a pretty present business owner in your business, whereas I know a lot of business owners kind of want to step out and remove themselves from the business. How important is it to you that you've got that hands-on approach and you intimately understand every aspect?
Look, I think it's really important. I, you know, I've obviously stepped out over for periods, you know, once I had my daughter, stepped back for a while. And, you know, back then I think I put somebody on as a manager who, you know, she wanted a managerial position, but she hadn't worked in the business before. I made the mistake of giving that to her. And, you know, over a period of a very short few months, I could see that things were starting to go downhill. And I had a few team members reach out to me saying, you know, that they just were really unhappy. She wasn't treating them well. Clients were dropping off like flies because they just weren't getting the same standard of service that they were used to in the clinic. And so I kind of, you know, obviously had a bit of a panic then. And I was like, well, you know, business still needs me. And it wasn't that it necessarily needed me to be in there doing all of the treatments. It was just that overseeing and making sure that things were operating the way they should be and the way they used to. And so, you know, getting back in there and getting amongst it and streamlining all the systems and protocols and, yeah, just making sure that that morale was really strong with the team, and so that they felt heard and appreciated and understood and, you know, guided as well. Like, I think for a long time there, you know, if they weren't confident to do certain things, I would make myself available on the phone basically 24/7. It's like, hey, if you get a little bit stuck midway through a consult and a client presents with a skin condition that, you know, it's just a little bit challenging for you, or it's something you're not entirely sure that you're going to give them the best outcome, give me a call. Let's talk it through together. And so I'd often be finding myself doing, like, you know, tandem consultations with the girls, like they're in the treatment room, but I would be, you know, on the phone to them, talking them through from my own experiences with certain things. And, you know, so they felt supported. And I think that was really, really important. And I still try to do that to this day. You know, I'm not in there every day. In fact, sometimes I'm only in there 1 or 2 days a week, but, you know, I pop in, I make sure that you know, I'll do a little sneaky look over, make sure all the hygiene standards are up to scratch and make sure, you know, people are following protocols with their treatments. You know, I might check over and see if they're writing proper client notes or sending follow-up emails or taking before and after photos. So, you know, there's, I guess it's an element of possibly what might be considered micromanaging, but I do feel like it's important to hold people accountable and, you know, so that they know that you have a standard that you expect and, you know, you're not going to accept anything less than that. Yeah, I think that's basically a really important element of having a business that people want to keep coming back to because they know that the standard's always the same.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a challenge in itself is keeping that consistency between one therapist to another and consistency in all of your services. What have you found to be the biggest challenge in your career and business ownership thus far?
Oh, look, COVID was a massive challenge.
I thought you might say that.
Yeah, COVID was definitely probably, last year was probably the hardest year ever. But biggest challenge, look, juggling being a parent, feeling like, you know, the business needs you, but then, you know, your child needs you and they're both dependent on you to a certain, well, to a large extent. And you always feel like you're dropping the ball with one or compromising one for the other. I feel like that's probably been my biggest challenge personally. You know, I feel like if I'm giving my all to work, then Ivy's neglected and then vice versa when I had to kind of really focus on things with her that might have been challenging, then, you know, I was dropping the ball and maybe not being there as much as I should have been when the business needed me. So I would say that's probably definitely been a difficult element. And yeah, the necessity to pivot with COVID would be up there as well.
Yeah, well, I wanted to ask you about being a mother, obviously, as somebody who is pregnant as well. I am just getting so much anxiety even thinking about trying to run a business and have a kid and trying to run a household. I mean, women are literal superwoman, you know, no wonder that song says who run the world, girls, because it's clear. But, you know, there is no such thing as balance. How do you or do you ever get, you know, time for yourself or make sure that your anxiety levels are kept at a normal level, or what does that look like?
A normal level for anxiety? look, I don't know. I feel like I am just winging it half the time, really. I rely really heavily on my manager, Rach. She's kind of, you know, just runs the show on a ground level. Like I said, I'm not in there all the time. So I do a lot of the external stuff, business development, admin, you know, a bit of social media and all that. Trying to cook and clean and be a mom and homeschool, all those things, like it's a lot. But I think the most important thing is basically just having a routine and lots of lists. I am a big list writer. So, you know, every day I sort of get up, I'm like, okay, what things really need my attention today? Write myself a list and try and make sure I've checked off that list by the end of the day. Otherwise, you know, I find after having a child, you tend to have a bit of short-term memory loss or something. I don't know. It's just not quite as good as it used to be. So, yeah, I don't know if they call that baby brain and it just continues on forever, but I need to hold myself accountable. So I find by making sure I've just got little areas that I try to be organized with, you know, like that helps me make sure I get things done that need to be done and, you know, all the rest can kind of wait, but I hold myself to a pretty high standard. And sometimes people say to me, you know, just relax a bit. It doesn't matter if your house is a mess or it doesn't matter about this or like it matters to me and I can't live in the messy house. Like it makes me stressed. So I do need to prioritize those things as well. So I guess it's just finding your own balance and being kind to yourself as well. And recognizing when you just can't do everything and asking for help as well, you know, saying that, you know, I'm just feeling a bit challenged at the moment. I can't do all of it. Like, can you help me? Can you do this? Outsource things if you can, you know, don't try and be a martyr. Don't try and do everything all the time or be everything to everyone because you just can't.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I'm interested to know, because I know a lot of people will be looking at your social media and, you know, hearing about this award-winning business in Toorak in Melbourne. You've got Zoe Foster-Blake on the bed. You know, I mean, how do you attribute the success, if you could, to anything of the business?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I think the success would probably be attributed to things like consistency, our customer service. You know, I really place a huge priority on customer service. So, you know, whenever or if ever we've had feedback that hasn't been entirely positive, I've tried to always learn and grow from that and recognize where we went wrong and, you know, do better next time. So, you know, whenever girls, and like, you know, if you're looking at our Google reviews, the overwhelming majority of feedback is very positive, but that's not to say that there is 100% been positive feedback forever. There's always been times where, you know, people might have felt that something wasn't the way they expected or the result wasn't what they expected. So, you know, you always get feedback from people. And I think I always try to teach the girls that, you know, well, let's listen and understand and hear what the client's saying. Don't take offense to it. Don't let it crush you or break you. Let it make you stronger and grow from it. And what can we do better next time to improve on the situation and make every experience the best possible experience for every client? So I think, yeah, customer service and just evolving, you know, offering new things. Don't just, you know, do the same thing over and over and over and always have the same services on offer and the same products. I think offering new treatments, creating new exciting things for clients that they want to keep coming back and trying, because people get bored. You know, they might have been coming to you for a really long time and then just be like, okay, well, they've done that same facial on me for the last, you know, 2 years now. Yes, my skin's fine, but like, what else is out there? So they might go somewhere else, not because you've done anything wrong, but they're just a bit bored. I think we've probably all done that with hairdressers or, you know, all kinds of things. So I think keeping things new and exciting and fresh and having offerings for clients that keep them wanting to coming back to your clinic and trying what you've got on offer and educating them, showing them that you're keeping on top of the industry because it is ever evolving. So, you know, that's one good thing about our industry. You know, you, there's always new things to learn.
Yes, no one is ever bored in our industry.
Not at all.
And speaking of that evolution, I'm interested to know, what do you hope for 2021 and the future? I mean, pandemic threw such a spanner in the works in 2020. Perhaps, you know, there's no evolution. You just want to stay consistent. But I'm interested to know what that looks like from your end.
Yeah, I don't really know. I hope 2021 is not like 2020, but I do feel that it's going to be quite similar to 2020. So personally, I am trying to, you know, get my mind in the right space to be ready to just kind of embrace it, learn that I can't control everything as well. I'm probably a bit of a control freak sometimes, but, you know, learn to just roll with the punches. I can't control everything, but try and, you know, keep going on that trajectory that we sort of started on last year, and all of the things that we did well last year, work out ways that we can do them better even this year. Because I mean, even just something as simple as, you know, our online ordering system, you know, before COVID, people would place an order, it'd come through, we'd then pick and pack it in clinic, then we'd go off to Australia Post, and then we'd send them an email with the tracking details, and it was all very laborious, do you know what I mean? But now, like in all of that, it kind of made me go, okay, well, this is just too time consuming. Clients weren't happy because Australia Post was getting really slow with everything. So, you know, I was like, okay, we need a really good couriering system in place and something that was much more automated, that the girls didn't have to be wasting time writing stupid emails or walking back and forth to the post office. So, you know, just little things like that. But, you know, so just streamlining systems so that if we were in the unfortunate event of having another lockdown, you know, we can do what we did last year, but do it better. And it's not really such a knee-jerk reaction, you know, more, okay, we've got this, let's just keep going where we left off there and get us through. But like, you know, as far as business growth financially and all those things, I don't think I could think that this is the year to be focusing on that per se. Some people might, but I don't. Yeah, I would like to introduce one more modality, treatment modality, into the clinic this year. So I've been sort of quietly researching that behind the scenes. I think, you know, I like to be doing that, you know, at least once a year, bring something new and exciting in treatment wise. So, you know, I've got something planned that will probably launch this year, but again, just taking it as it comes really, and not putting too much pressure on myself.
Oh, good on you, Brooke. You are so practical and down to earth. I absolutely adore it. And I know our audience will. So thank you so much for coming on this morning and taking some time out and joining me for the chat.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
How humble is Brooke? I mean, an entire empire of a business, yet says to me once we get offline that she couldn't imagine anyone would want to hear her story, which I think is the actual magic of her story. Brooke is a testament to what hard work and niching down can do for your business, your clients, and your team. Brooke's philosophy of not performing treatments that you don't like and investing your passion and education into the ones you do is such a simple strategy to implement into your space, which has clearly showed off in the awards and the accolades that Me Skin and Body has won. If you're wanting to let Brooke know how much you've loved today's episode, you can do so by sharing how you're listening over on your social media stories and by tagging Brooke at Me Skin and Body, us at Beauté Industry, and of course myself at Tamara Reid Beauté. Don't forget to check out all of the Beauté goodness through our Facebook community, digital magazine, Club Beauté membership to make sure that you are up to date with the latest. Until next time, stay connected.